You are listening to the Horse Radio Network, part of the Equine Network family.
Ellie is fresh off a trip from New Mexico, where she learned more about the world of positive reinforcement training in horses. We're diving right in to learn more. And we caught up with the Kentucky 3-Day Event 4-star winner ahead of his trip overseas to CHIO Aachen. Thanks for tuning in.
From Heels Down Mag, a podcast where horse pros chat about what's happening in the horse world over drinks.
Welcome to Happy Hour.
I'm Justine Griffin.
I'm Jessica Payne.
And I'm Ellie Wasnicka. Welcome to episode 137 of Heels Down Happy Hour.
Hey, guys.
Hello.
Hello. How's the heat dome treating everyone?
Aren't you in a heat dome too, though?
Oh, yes. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, it's awful.
I'm making sure you were. I felt like we shouldn't be alone, so I thought we should be including you.
Yeah. No, it's horrible.
I think it is hot everywhere except for Jackson Hole, Wyoming.
Yep, that's they just got snow. It was crazy.
Crazy.
Yeah. My coworkers in the Pacific Northwest, they're like, yeah, it's 60s. I'm like, screw you.
Yeah. Ugh. Ellie, welcome to the hellscape that is my everyday life.
Yeah, this is horrible. I'm like cold hosing the horses all the time because they're like, what the heck? I don't live in this environment.
It's so
I was going to ask you, are they handling it okay? Because it's a sudden change. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, they're doing well. And luckily, I'm able to, you know, since I work from home, I'm able to just go out multiple times a day and, you know, cold hose them, which I think I've shared my trick.
Oh, yeah.
On here before. But because I used to love that absorbing refreshment product, but they don't make it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They have like a cool down, but it's like some different stuff. So I'm like, meh. But so basically, I just take like a little bit of rubbing alcohol and like a lot of witch hazel and then put it in like with like 2 gallons of water. And it does a really good job of taking away like that, you know, itch that comes when they're sweating. Like, so now they're not like trying to break the stalls down, rubbing their butt cheeks everywhere because they're sweaty. And yeah, so I just feel like that a few times a day.
Yeah. The rubbing alcohol plus witch hazel is like the Courtney Carson
special.
Yeah.
That's our everyday kind of just spray on them, and then honestly then they just don't get itchy. It is kind of nice. What is a Courtney Carson
special? Yeah, and it helps them dry quicker. Is it?
It is a Courtney Carson special.
Yeah. A nice throwback there.
Throwback to Courtney.
But this episode is brought to you by Yanmar. All right, Ellie, so since you were just out in the desert, I hope you brought back a spicy fun drink for us.
Yes. So I did have lots of fun drinks, if I'm being honest, but I loved the fruity. There were a lot of fruity options,
what?
Which obviously
that's up your
is
alley?
My
no
kind
way.
Of thing. Right. I had one that I could not find the recipe for that was at the hotel I was staying at was called a Santa Fe After 5. And it was like right up my alley with like rum and pineapple juice. And it was that one I had a lot of, but in any case, the one that I thought was cool
or something.
Right. Yeah. But the one that I thought was really good and like more of a gateway to fruity for you and Justine was the Santa Fe Sunset.
Oh.
So it's 1 ounce of Blanco tequila, or you could probably use any kind of tequila you want, 2 ounces of fresh blood orange juice, and then 2 ounces of champagne, and you can add mint for garnish. So you would just chill the tequila and your orange juice and then add it to your champagne flute and then top with your champagne and your garnish of mint.
Nice.
Okay, I love this. This is perfect.
Right? It was like super refreshing. And I was like, this would be a good gateway fruity drink.
Right?
But it's not too crazy fruity. Like the champagne with, you know, just a little bit of orange juice and the tequila. I'm all in. I'm
right?
all in on
it was
this
like
one.
The Santa Fe take on the mimosa.
Oh.
So I thought it was really good.
Yum.
Yeah, I like it. I like it.
All right, Justine, I've heard you got some news from FEI.
Oh, I do. Always an interesting day for what's going on in the FEI.
What's happening now?
So this, I know, there's a lot going on. So bear with me as we go back to the Paris Olympic Games. You know, there was a lot of chatter from horse people and non-horse people about dressage, and there's been this ongoing conversation of, you know, top level riders riding horses with gaping mouths and blue tongues and abuse scandals that are real, you know, high level riders being reprimanded or suspended for instances of abuse or videos that suggest welfare issues. Well, the FEI formed a special committee after some of those more high profile controversies to really delve into like what is going on. And there was a rule change proposal that came up and that special committee considered that would change a proposal that would allow riders to use snaffle bridles instead of the double bridles at the highest level of competition in dressage. Now that would be like a huge change.
Yeah.
And a big step away from tradition and the way it's been done for a long time. You know, last year they changed a rule about using spurs in international dressage competition. And that took several years of discussion, I think, to get to that point. But now spurs are no longer
mandatory.
Mandatory. But so, you know, this rule change proposal would take that a step further and allow, you know, a rider to ride in just a snaffle bridle. But, you know, spoiler alert here, I'm getting to the meat of the story, is that they decided not to move away from double bridles. So that has not changed yet. So it is still a requirement that a double bridle, which is the curb bit with the brandoon, must be used at a CDI 3-star level and above. So they weren't willing to make that change for this next competition year. But, you know, I think it's interesting that this committee was formed by the FEI to begin with and that they're having these discussions. That does show that there's this openness to hear from the community and consider, like, what's best for the horses and the future of the sport. And just because they didn't make that change this year doesn't mean that it won't come up again, is the way I see it. But, you know, there are different federations that have been really vocal about this. The Swedish and Dutch Equestrian Federation specifically were the first to ask the FEI to reevaluate the double bridle requirement in 2023 and again last year in 2024. So there is some serious pressure on the FEI, I think, to start thinking about these things and think about, like, what kind of difference does it really make for one rider to choose, to have the freedom to choose to compete in a snaffle versus 100%. A double bridle? I mean, just like, I've never ridden in a double bridle. I'm not going to lie. I've never competed at a level where that would even be considered. Obviously, I think that the skill of the rider, that's really 100%. Important,
yep.
Right? Like when it's time to ride in a double bridle, you have to be a skilled rider to understand the finesse of that and to make it appropriate. Yeah. But I mean, Jess, as someone who's competed at the higher levels, like, do you think it makes a big difference? Like, if someone wants to ride a Grand Prix test and a snaffle?
I mean, I just think, you know, it's taking, I mean, I see their point is like, okay, you need to be able to put the horse in a double bridle and be able to use it and like ride more on the snaffle. Okay. So I get like a little bit of it, but at the end of the day, like, you're talking about horse welfare and all this crazy stuff. I'm like, why not allow somebody to pick the snaffle? Like, don't ban the double bridle, but like maybe just allow more options for something like a snaffle and everything. But I think they're just a little bit still old school in thinking and saying, okay, like, we just want to stick with tradition, which I get that. But at the end of the day, like, a lot of horses just want to go in a snaffle and then you have to teach them to go in a double bridle. And so I think that's a little unfair to make the horse have to learn it, but that's kind of, you know, they have these crazy rules sometimes. And so you just kind of have to go with the flow, to be honest.
Right. Yeah. It's interesting. I think it's a great discussion. Yeah. I feel like it's a good time for this discussion. And I do hope they're getting a lot of rider feedback. Cause at the end of the day, like it's up to the rider, you know?
Yeah, and what's it going to hurt if you give people the option?
Just give them an option if they want to go in a snaffle and they want to go in a basic snaffle instead of a double. Like, I get it. Like, why not do it and show off the horse that they can be that soft and supple in just a plain snaffle opposed to having, like, you know, a bunch more stuff in their mouth.
Exactly.
And from the videos I've seen, most Grand Prix riders, they don't ride in double bridles at home when they're practicing.
No, and I think that's so I'm the
not
thing. Sure, I think,
or not well, all the time. Like, so it's like, why?
I would think it's a little bit more like jumping, too, is that, like, we don't ride a lot in our jumping bits, right? They do more and just snaffle work right. And then, you know, do it. So I think that maybe when they're practicing different things, they kind of utilize a bunch of tools in their toolbox. But, yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. at the end of the day, I really think it should be up to the rider, especially if they're wanting to go softer in the bridle. Like, I don't know why that's kind of what the punishment is.
Exactly. Yeah. So we'll see. I think it's great that they're having the discussion. You know, the Chronicle of the Horse wrote a really thorough piece on this. So if you're interested and wanted to explore the conversation further, we'll make sure that link is in the show notes. But Jess, what do you have for news?
So I have some really cool news, and congrats. Carl Cook is on fire again. He's got the mare, the Caracola de la Rue horse that he has won a long list of events of big five stars and everything. But he has now won the Grand Prix five star at Rotterdam, the CSIO. He came in, there were eight horses that jumped off, and he, once again, that mare, he's super, super fast on. And when he's on fire, like, that mare obviously is very tough to beat, because eight people came at it and he was once again another winner of a five star. So pretty impressive. Like, they're on fire again. She's only 13 years old. So I think she's got, you know, a long way to keep coming at it and a lot more wins up, you know, their sleeves. But congrats to them, because it has been, for the first time in 10 years, a U.S. rider winning Rotterdam. So impressive and really good win for the U.S. And yeah, pretty impressive for Carl.
Yeah. I mean, clearly that is a nice mare. Amazing. It's just a nice horse. Yeah.
I mean, he rides her well. So. Like, the partnerships come a long way and they're figuring it out. And, you know, he knows she's a special horse, who doesn't. But at the end of the day, like, he can be really fast in her, really competitive. And, you know, congrats, because he's winning some, you know, he won Rome last year and everything else. A lot of big tracks that Americans haven't, you know, won in a while.
Yep, I agree.
So super, super exciting. And watch the rest of the season. I'm sure they have a lot more big competitions and we'll be cheering for the U.S. in that way. What do you have, Ellie?
I have an interesting one from Shinkotique. I mean, I know we all know about the, you know, swim and auction that the area does every year, but the Shinkotique Volunteer Fire Company was notified by DSC Photography, that like takes photos of the wild horses all the time, that this horse looked like it had a problem with its back leg. And so it was just a chestnut filly that was only a few days old. And when they were zooming in on the photo and stuff, they actually found out that the horse does not have a hoof on its rear leg. So, you know, from that far away, they weren't able to tell, like, if it was injured or if it was just born that way, you know, like a congenital deformity. But the foal has been dubbed Foal 84. She doesn't have a name yet. But they went out and they were able to catch her. Unfortunately, they weren't able to persuade the mom to come along. So they were able to, luckily, find a mom who had just lost her baby a few weeks prior, so they were able to make a new introduction, and that has worked really well. So now they have made like a, you know, a makeshift prosthetic for now, but they're working with a veterinarian friend of the fire department's that has covered the care for the filly's prosthetic. So they're hoping that this will work. I mean, obviously she'll never be for sale, never be ridden or anything like that, but they're hoping that since she's so young, this is a possibility. Obviously, for most horses, something like this would be euthanasia. Yeah. But they're hoping, since she is so young, that she can adapt quickly to a prosthetic. So they are hoping for that. And they're hoping that they get some good names on Facebook. So if anyone has any good name ideas for Foal 84, feel free to reach out on Facebook to the Shinkotique Fire Department and get your name in the running there.
She's so cute. The pics of her are, like, adorable.
I know. And the fact that she slept, like, in their car, like, with the air conditioning as they went to this new home for her was super cute. With this heat dome, she was probably like, actually, yeah, that sounds fantastic.
That sounds amazing.
Pick me up.
But I hope it works out, because I mean, I've done a lot of research into the, you know, amputation and prosthetics, because I was even thinking about it with Flint's thing last year. But I don't know. It's one of those things with horses who have had, you know, full capability. It's one of those things where it's like, just because you can, you know, maybe you shouldn't. But I'm hopeful with this being so low and her only, you know, being alive for a week, that this will be a good permanent solution for her.
Yeah, absolutely.
Finally, horse show software you can rely on. HorseSpot offers cloud-based horse show management services for circuits around the globe. It is easy to use for your horse show. It is easy to manage with proven results. Find out more by visiting www.horsespot.net today.
So this week for a product review, I was thinking, like, we're all in a hot, humid climate, right? Like, we're all suffering. Yeah. It's summer. It's the worst. It's the dang heat dome. But, I mean, that's when the flies are insane for me here in Florida. Like, it's just, ugh, I hate it so much. So I was wondering, like, do you guys have any really good tricks for managing the flies on your farm? Like, we do a fly feed through that, which really helps simplify. I do believe in that. But is there something that you guys, like, Jess and, like, what do you and Doug do at the farm to kind of keep the flies
at bay? So the biggest thing for us is we put in the fly system, and that has been the biggest game changer, is we run that, and it runs
the spray
through the whole,
like, yep, in the
stalls. So it runs through the whole system, and it makes a huge difference. So, like, we don't have those biting flies in the barn because it's constantly running. And the other big thing is, like, it is a bit of a pain, but we pick through the stalls consistently so that there's not a lot of, like, manure. And the manure gets hauled off, like, up to the top of the hill so that you don't have them kind of lingering around. So they'll pick through the stalls in the summertime a little bit more frequently, like, to try to get, you know, they don't sit in the stalls with a bunch of it. And that's kind of hard, but that is the ideal kind of situation, is, like, you know, they don't, like, when we turn out at night, then, like, they go back through, pick through the stall, so they just don't sit there and, like, create flies. So it all gets sent up top, basically. And then we do some of, we have one horse that's got a bit of, like, kind of some, like, weird, he's very sensitive skin, I guess is probably the best. We do use the fly boots on him to keep his legs irritated, like, not irritated, because if he goes out, okay, he will stomp and then it irritates him. So, but, like, when it's this hot, we can't even really, like, turn out as much. Like, I mean, we're just, this week has been just ridiculous, ridiculous hot.
I know.
Like, we can't even use their fly sheets. We can't use their cool coats. We can't use anything. Like, they can wear their fly mask, but they still have to come in by the middle of the day. Like, by 11 or 12 o'clock, they're inside. So a lot of it is just keeping the fans on and keeping the fly spray going.
I'm in the pretty much the same thing. Like, it's just too hot to wear the fly sheet. And I do like a fly sheet, like a Smart Pack fly sheet works great, but it's just too dang hot. Mine does wear the fly boots outside just because he's like the type who chronically has little nicks from, like, laying down and getting up, and, like, they'll turn into a summer sore in 2 days if I don't put the fly boot on.
So bad down there. Oh.
I know. It's crazy. So it's just, like, he's got to live in the fly boots. But yeah, like, a fly mask, fly boots, and then he's also inside by midday. It's just too hot. But I've got to say, I really love the Kinetic Vet fly spray, but they also do a roller, or like a roller fly spray. And so, like, what I'll do is I'll roll it in my hand and I put it on his ears because he hates the fly masks with the ears.
Yeah, we love the ones with the ears.
I know. Mine's he hates them. I don't, you know, like, they rub the little tips of his ears sometimes. So I know. I'm like, his donkey ears that won't fit in the fly mask, I guess. So. So I roll the roller on my hands and shove my fingers in his ears, and that works. But, and then also I pair it with they have those great dermacloths, which are like baby wipes on steroids. They're just like heavy duty wet wipes for horses. So, like, he'll come in and I'll wipe his face all down after I take the fly mask off and then hose him and stuff. So those are my, like, summer remedies.
That's
right
nice.
Now is I'm really into the Kinetic Vet. But also I have to complain, like, fly spray. It's so expensive.
It doesn't even work.
It's crazy. I know. It's the craziest thing. Like, my barn has the fly system, too, that sprays in the stall, but I still buy a bottle of fly spray. And every time it's time to buy the new jug, I'm just like, I'm ready. Like, this is effing crazy. How much money I'm spending on fly spray.
And that's
spray.
The thing is, honestly, like, we use fly spray, obviously, like, a little bit, but I'm happier with the fly system because we use
like
better grade of it. It works. It's a little bit more natural, so you're not like breathing in all those chemicals. And then when I'm spraying the $30 plus bottle of fly spray that doesn't even work, I get more irritated. I'm like, I should just stick with whatever's in the system. And so, yeah, it's so annoying, to be honest.
Yeah,
it is. What about you, Ellie? I know, like, you definitely have like a bug season, but is it more spring for you?
No, it's this time. So Nemo, especially, he's allergic to fly saliva. Like, he's actually been tested, like, by Cornell. So it just makes him, like, it gives him basically this crazy itch where he'll, like, completely strip off, like, all of the skin on his stomach. It's disgusting. So for him, like, I have to be, like, extra careful. So, like, he starts going on, like, a crap ton of Benadryl starting at, like, end of April when the flies are bad. I didn't have to start it till, like, end of May this year, which was nice. But so for them, like, my horses go out. I put them out at 8 p.m. and I bring them in at 5 a.m., which is awful. And thankfully, Matt does that job because I am not a 5 a.m. riser. Let me just, like, make that very clear. But for us, for fly sheets, I don't use them anymore just because I was having a heck of a time with just being lazy when it comes to putting them on and stuff. And it's hard, like, once they get wet, you know, waiting for them to dry and stuff. So I don't use anything because my horses don't stomp so much when they're out at night. But I did use the – have you guys seen the Schneiders has that mosquito mesh?
Oh, what's that?
Interesting. Okay. No.
Okay. Go look up these sheets. They're called mosquito mesh, and they are so much lighter than any other fly sheet I've used. And you can get them with or without, like, a belly band, but that has definitely helped us with Nemo when it comes to fly season. And it's really helpful. Like, it's actually made for mosquitoes, like, because well, the place we boarded before we bought our place was right by a river, so it had mosquitoes up the shizu. So I put them out with, like, a full neck and everything, and this is, like, such a fine mesh that the mosquitoes actually can't get in
it. Is it UV? I'm looking at it right now, because you can do that. I like the no belly band.
Yeah. Just yeah. For single. And it's got, like, a whole bunch of different options.
Yeah, because I like the attached neck, and it is UV or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Nice. And it's so much just, like, lighter, and I felt like more durable. Like, my horses didn't destroy
the way they destroyed.
No. Oh, nice. Nope.
Wow. All right.
And they have a whole bunch of
40% UV protection rating. That's pretty good.
And they have a whole different type of options for, like, withers, so to make sure it doesn't rub them. So they have, like, for sloped, like, conformation, like, and they'll tell you, like, a more quarter horse or a more thoroughbred would do better with this. You
best
know, it's like insect more
protection,
upright.
Best airflow, 40% UV, and playful durability. Look at that.
Yeah. No, they are.
I like Schneiders. Like, I have a lot of their stable sheets. They make a really great baker's dupe that I love. They make good blankets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So when I have to do that, that is what I do. But the biggest thing for us with the flies, like, I'm lucky because in my barn, I knock on wood, knock on all the wood, I really don't get very many because I have, you know, those big ram fans running in each stall all the time when they're in them. So that does a really good job with that. And then I'm a big proponent and I spend way too much money and I buy the Ultra Shield EX fly spray that, you know, costs like, you know, $90 for a gallon. But that's the one that also kills and repels ticks. That's something like with our horses being out on, you know, pasture near fence line and with there being literally so many deer all the time. That's something that I try to do to protect them as much as I can. I tried the fly predators, you know, like the stuff that you sprinkle out.
A long time ago. And I don't, I don't know.
I feel, yeah, I've never felt like it was super effective. No. For us, it's too wet here. Yeah. Like, so it just never lasts long enough because it gets wet, you know?
Yeah, and I think for us, like, with there being other, like, you know, farms and, you know, horse facilities so close, it was kind of useless because, you know, even though I'm like Jess, I, you know, muck through the stall like four or five times a day and I, you know, get rid of it. But the other places, you know, don't clean their pastures and obviously cattle and stuff. Like, I mean, they make a lot of poop.
Yeah.
So it's like impossible. I feel like you'd have to get everyone like in your 5 mile radius to like do fly critters in order for them to actually work. Yeah.
Definitely. So interesting. If you guys have your own fly tips and you want to share them with us, we'd love it if you would post it in our Facebook group, the Heels Down Happy Hour Podcast Lounge. Please. I'm always looking for new tips. I don't know them all. You know what I mean? Like, I'm always like, what can I do to make this summer better?
100%. And if fly spray's ever on sale, post the links.
Please.
Yes, please. We could all use a break.
From dragging arenas to hauling hay, maintaining pastures and more, Yanmar tractors are built for the demands of the equestrian life. Whether you're caring for a few horses at home or running a busy boarding barn, Yanmar delivers the power, comfort, and reliability you need. Trusted by riders, barn owners, and even a few friends on the podcast, discover why Yanmar is built better. Backed longer, go visit yanmartractor.com to learn more. So, Ellie, you just had a crazy time in New Mexico, and I want to hear more because, honestly, I want you to tell, like, I know you were out there, and I knew you were doing a bunch of clinics, but honestly, like, what were you really doing? Who all attended? And I just kind of want to know what, like, your day-to-day was like.
Yeah, so it was in Santa Fe. So I flew into Albuquerque, and it was, like, an hour and, like, 20 minutes away. And I stayed at this hotel in downtown Santa Fe, which was really cool because it was like walking distance from everything. Nice. And the farm was only like 20 minutes away from there.
Wow.
It was it was cool because it was literally this quiet road with like multiple equestrian properties on it. And I did really enjoy that there were prairie dogs on the side of the roads, like literally instead of, you know, like ground chucks or groundhogs, whatever you call them, on the side of the roads, like there would just be like this little hill. And then like, you know, there's Simone just like sticking out. I thought it was really so cute. Fun. I was like, wow, I really am in the desert. So that was, that was exciting. It was hosted at Terra Nova, which is a facility that is home to Via Nova Training that actually put on the foundations of the positive reinforcement, the R+ training clinic. So it was 2 days. And both days, like, we started at 8 and we ended at 4:30. Like, it was, like, back to
school.
Those
are long
season.
Days.
Yeah. But it was really cool because it was a mix of, like, some hands-on stuff, some demonstrations, and then also a lot of, like, interacting with each other and, like, really in-depth conversations and then just, you know, presentations as well. This was a really interesting group because it was a whole bunch of different people. We had veterinarians, scientists, professors, liberty trainers, Mustang trainers, dressage judge, grooms, different, like a, you know, tradition, like lesson program trainer. So it was literally kind of all across the board, which made, I think, for a really interesting group for conversation, for sure.
So can you explain more, Ellie, like, they invited all of these different people out there, like you just described, but what are the core concepts that they're trying to teach or convey, I guess, by bringing you there?
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, Villanova's big, like, their push is that they want to go away from that stereotype of the clicker training. Like, even me going in, right, I had heard of clicker training. You know, we've talked about it on the podcast before. And I'd seen it, but I'd always kind of heard it, honestly, locally as more of like an insult or like a, oh, you know, it's just people who feed a lot of treats and, you know, oh, they don't compete, you know, at high levels of the sport. They're just, you know, training their horses like dogs kind of things. And that stereotype is what Villanova really wants to get away from. They want to show that positive reinforcement training can help you and your horse to be more successful in the show pen. So their focus is mostly, like, they had everybody, but one of their heads of the department, they are dressage only. I don't remember what level. I know they told us, but just to show that this type of training can transfer over to the actual show ring and it can make you more successful with your horse. That was their big push.
Okay, so beyond the stereotypes, do you feel like that's fair to say?
I do to a certain extent, because I feel like, I mean, we've talked about this before, right? I'm a big proponent of groundwork. I've done that stuff with Buck Brannaman and even before him. You know, I think that there is so much that you can teach horses on the ground that makes you more successful in the saddle and in the show ring. But the whole concept of positive reinforcement training, right, is to change how we would normally do it, right? So we'll do an example of, like, say your horse is not, like, refuses to load, like, wants to, you know, just see a trailer and just, nope, doesn't even want to go near it, right? The argument is that in, like, traditional training, right, you would just apply more pressure to that lead rope till eventually the horse is like, oh, okay, fine, and walks on. The offside of that, in what positive training reinforcement wants to do, is that it encourages horses through their motivation to want to seek out food, seek out enrichment, that, like, seeking and that, like, wanting to learn, that's what they want to focus on, and they want to use that as a way to shape the behavior that they want. So that sounds really big. So let me kind of break it down a little bit. So the first thing they helped us to do was just to understand, you know, motivation, right? So if we talked about, like, you know, my horses know that in the morning, if they go in their stall, that's where the food is. So no one ever hesitates to go in their stall in the morning, right? Versus, like, if I take them to, like, you know, if I take Batman to a show and there's a really scary, you know, area of the arena that he does not want to go in because, say, someone's got a really weird looking chair or something, right? Then he's going to use his avoidance motivation. He's like, I don't want to go anywhere near that. He's not seeking out something like he's seeking out his breakfast in the morning. So to keep that motivation throughout all of training is really what Villanova wanted to focus on with the positive reinforcement. The way that I kind of took it is, and the way that they did this, which I thought was really interesting. So have you guys ever heard of Portal? It's, I guess it's like a big psychology thing. It's a portable operant research and teaching lab.
Okay. No,
I haven't heard.
Okay. Yeah. So this was a really interesting thing that we did on the first day, because to be honest, when I first started, I was like, this is above my head. Like, I just, like, yes, of course a horse is going to want to do something if they're going to get a treat for it. Just like, you know, just like my dog, when they hear the crinkle, they're going to automatically sit, you know, they know that that's coming, you know. But the portal kit was interesting because the whole point of it was to show how different types of teaching actually changes the way that we learn. So the portal kit was just like literally a bag of a whole bunch of different stuff, like, you know, pencils, like a little, like, matchbox car, dice, you know, things like that. And we partnered up, and I was actually partnered up with a veterinarian from the UK. And it was really interesting because we weren't allowed to communicate with each other at all. We just put these, like, six objects in front of our partner, and our partner was instructed to just interact with the objects. And so the way we did it was like, okay, like, I'm like, I'm just touching random objects. And I'm like, okay, you know, I'm doing this, you know. And then finally, when I touched, you know, the red dye, I got a click on the clicker. And I was like, okay, so that was right. So then I started touching the other objects. And I was like, is there, like, more to this? And then I touched the red dice again, and I got another click. So I was like, okay, duh, I'm going to only touch that object. And they compared that to, like, when you got that, yep, you did it right, that changed the way that you felt more encouraged to continue to interact with the objects. the comparison they made was like, if I had touched the other objects and the person just like, you know, swatted my hand away, then I might be like, well, crap, I don't know if I want to touch any of these objects at all because I'm only getting, you know, swatted for it. So that is kind of the breakdown of the way they say, like, look, our horses, they don't speak our language and we don't speak theirs. So this is a way that we can kind of play that, you know, that game that we used to play as a kid, right? Or I feel like I played it all the time in the swimming pool, right? Of like warmer, colder, where you like try to get your partner to like go somewhere and you're like, oh, you're warmer. Oh, yeah. Nope, yeah. Now you're colder. Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that was kind of like the whole premise is like, you know, you use the clicker in positive or the clicker or your verbal cues or whatever in positive reinforcement training to basically say, yeah, that's a step closer. Like using that warmer as a way to say like, you know, you've got it, horse, you know, let's keep trying this. So that was kind of like the overall mindset of it. And then they talked about how that can kind of go to a whole bunch of different things, yeah. Right? So say we teach our horse that they're going to get a treat when they hear that clicker noise, right? And we're not giving them any kind of like swatting of like the comparison that I kind of made in my head was like in, I remember growing up that I had heard, right, when riding that there's, you know, you're riding in a box, right? You've got your right side, your left side, the front and the back. And you just close off the boxes that you don't want. And then, you know, that's the only box that they're left to go in, right? Yeah. So if I want a right leg yield, I'm going to shut the front door with my reins, shut the left door, and then shut the back door. Positive reinforcement training is more like leaving those other doors open and using smaller steps both on the ground and in the saddle to get the horse to see that right leg yield as a way of earning a reward. Like they're still using the traditional training cues, but they're not like, they're like, you know, not all pressure is aversive, right? That you can touch a horse and that should be able to do it versus where traditional training would be, you know, you're going to apply more pressure until you get the correct response, right? Does that make sense?
Yeah. No, definitely. It does. It's interesting. It's just it's like turning it on its head a little bit in terms of like traditionally how we've approached horse training. But like for you, Ellie, do you feel like what you learned while you were there, like are these things or these concepts, like could you incorporate them at home with your own horses? You know, like horses that you know and you manage their routine day to day. Like, do you feel like it's beneficial for you to try to do some of these things?
Yeah. I mean, for me, I like Berkeley, he has been, right? You know, I've always said like traditional training. Like Berkeley is traditionally trained and he knows his job and he's happy with his job. And I don't think that I would really do anything different riding wise because he knows that when I slightly, you know, barely move my left rein, that he's going to automatically give me that side, you know? So I feel like for horses that are already finished to that point, I'm not sure how that would help under saddle.
Sure.
However, I do see it helping on the ground. What I thought was interesting was that there was a Grand Prix rider, and I, for the life of me, can't remember her name right now, but she came in to talk to us because she came to do some positive reinforcement training just to kind of see what it was about. And she uses different aspects of it as a way to do the groundwork that helps her in the show ring. So her, I thought, was a great way of making this make sense for like actively competing, right? So what she talked about was like, if, you know, she's still going to ride a horse, you know, with leg aids, with, you know, pressure when, you know, I'm trying to, you know, get them to lengthen their stride kind of thing. However, in terms of like getting a horse acclimated to the show grounds and things like that, right? She talked about, you know, when you can't warm up at a Hunter Derby, right? But you get to go in and like walk your horse around. she talked about how she would use some of the groundwork techniques when her horse was afraid of different obstacles or different areas of the arena to kind of keep her horse focused on her and less focused on the environment. So I can really see it being helpful in those situations as a way of like, almost like when, you know, you have a really reactive dog, like my mom's dog, right? She has a Coonhound German Shepherd. So he's very other dog reactive, and she lives in the suburbs. So there are other dogs when she's walking her dog all the time. And her dog trainer had always taught her like just to put out her hand and say touch. And it like gets her dog to, okay, yeah, I'm going to touch her hand because I know a treat comes. And so she trained that in her house. So that way she can use that on walks when her horse or her horse, when her dog starts pulling on the leash and sees another dog, you know, and starts barking, like really wants to pull. She can use that, like say, hey, look at my hand, touch this. And she can use that as a way to kind of get his focus back on her. So I can see it being helpful in those situations and helping horses with new environments specifically. And I understand, like, and that's something that I feel like Buck Brandeman, Monty Roberts, like, this is something, you know, very groundwork based. That's not a new concept. It's just the concept of basically the treat and the reward as opposed to the pressure.
Yeah. No, that's super interesting. And like, you kind of touched on it, but like somebody that is not really familiar with positive reinforcement training, but they want to learn, like, what's your advice to them, like, on how to kind of start to learn about it and kind of dip their toes in it?
Yeah. So Villanova does do clinics all the time, but they also told me about this website that has a lot of videos and stuff that you can watch, and it's connectiontraining.com. Oh, nice. And I thought that was a really good way to kind of see how you can do different aspects of it and just to kind of test it out, right? Yeah. So those are definitely good ways to look into it. Yeah.
So Ellie, you know, we've talked about this a number of times of like, it's just a weird time for horse sports in terms of like horse welfare being pretty front and center at the when we're talking about like the upper levels of the sport and what people see and sometimes riders being suspended for various things. How do you feel like the positive reinforcement movement? I don't know if it's fair to call it a movement.
I think it is. Yeah.
Okay. You know, like how do you feel like this fits into the overall landscape of horse sports? Like, do you feel like it clashes with the sport and performance side of things? Or do you feel like there's a way for it to meld in and some of the concepts make sense? Or I'm just curious, as someone who spent time out there, at, you know, going out there with an open mind and learning new things.
Right. Yeah. I feel like, right, this is the big, you know,
the big meat, question. Yeah.
The meat of this conversation. And that is honestly where I was very skeptical coming into this because I was like, okay, but can I teach my horse to do something with this? Yes. But could I also teach them something faster and help them quicker by also applying, you know, not saying, you know, grab a whip and beat your horse.
Of
I'm
course,
saying if I want my horse to pick up his left leg, right? If I squeeze his, you know, behind his fetlock a little bit, and he picks it up, I don't think that that is necessarily negative punishment, even though it's that simple pressure release, right? And I feel like the basis of all horse training is pressure and release, right? You want them to go forward, you squeeze. When they go forward, you release. Like it's, you know, that makes sense. And I struggled with this because that's how horses communicate with each other in the wild, right? And in the pen, like we've all seen, right? You know, that one mare, I'll talk about my mare specifically, right? When the horses get too close to her, right? She applies pressure to them, starting with, you know, the body language of her ears, but then also like she'll charge them a little bit and like, you know, to get out of her space. And so do I think that this is the only way to train horses? No, I don't. And I don't think that all pressure and release should be taken away from training, because I don't feel like, I mean, if we think about even emergent situations, right? Like if your horse doesn't like to trailer, let's talk about the wildfires out west, right? If your horse doesn't get on the trailer, your horse is staying. Like there's no time for that kind of thing, right? So having a horse that responds to pressure is important just because you never know when you're going to need it, right? Like if it's just, you know, if they're stuck somewhere and you need to apply pressure, I mean, it's no different than if Matt and I are walking down the street and I'm not paying attention and we're crossing the street and Matt pulls on my arm because I'm about to get hit by a car because I'm not paying attention, right? I need to know that when Matt pulls on my arm, I'm not going to rip and pull away, right? I'm going to go to his pressure, like, because there's probably a reason for it. You know what I mean? So I think that still very much needs to be in equestrian sport. The clinic made a lot of comparisons to marine animals and also like, you know, giraffes and elephants in zoos and things like that. Like that's how all of these animals are trained, with positive reinforcement training, right? Because I cannot apply pressure to an orca whale in order to get it to do things. And I understood that to a certain extent, but I also felt like that comparison was pretty murky, because you're like, well, this is a you're taking a wild large animal and you're putting it in a small cage. That's kind of like saying, yeah, if my horse was stalled 24/7, of course it would want to hang out with me and get treats, you know what I mean? Because it's not getting the enrichment from the other aspects that it needs from its life, you know, like not interacting with other horses and things like that. So I felt like
it's complicated. Like there are layers to this to really think about, you know?
Right. Because it's going to come down to people who abuse horses are not going to use traditional training anyway, you know, like they're not interested in even, you know, traditional pressure and release. So to get them interested in positive reinforcement training, I think is going to be a very big push. And I think this comes down to, too, how it's being addressed right now, specifically in the media and stuff. Like right now, some positive reinforcement trainers on the internet are slamming high performance people in our industry. Some rightfully so, in my opinion. However, some of them, you know, might have just been riding with their reins, you know, too short, or their horse, you know, might have been pulling them hard that day. It might have been a weird environment for the horse. Like, it's one of those situations where, you know, you weren't there, you weren't on the horse, and you were not sure what was happening there. And I feel like that kind of mentality is not going to get this to be a widely accepted way of training horses, right? Because if you immediately go into the conversation by saying you abuse your horses, which I'm glad Villanova didn't do that, because I'm like, I have had, you know, Berkeley since he was 4 years old. I've had Q. I've known Q since he's been 3 months old. I know for a fact I have not abused this horse, you know?
So of course.
I do not want to be, like, I think it makes everyone defensive when you're immediately going after, you know, this type of training is abuse. Because to be honest, I don't think it is. Like, to apply pressure to a horse's side when you're trying to move them over on the cross ties, you know, there's a difference between applying pressure and, you know, shoving your whole body into them or smacking them repeatedly. Like, and I think therein lies the problem, right? Is that we need to have a conversation that shows the difference between the two, how you can still, like Villanova does, right? They still use the same cues in the saddle that we do. Right. The whole thing is that when it comes down to this horse doesn't want to pick up the left lead, like this response isn't the reaction that I'm looking for. You know, the horse doesn't want to go forward, blah, blah, blah. Right. Instead of going to, well, maybe I need, you know, a spur, or maybe I need to, you know, ride and do some harsher tools. I'm not even really sure, because I wouldn't ever train like that. So it's hard for me to, like, I think that's hard for those of us that aren't aggressive horsemen to kind of think about. But the whole point of their training is to take that step back and say, okay, how can I teach this in a way that the horse understands? And I think honestly, if we got more of traditional trainers into just groundwork, period, that would be a great gateway into positive reinforcement. Because I think that ultimately, I think that horses respond so much to our body our body language. They respond so much to the way that we can interact with them on the ground when they can actually see us, not just feel us on their backs. So I think that that is kind of how we can start to navigate these murky waters and start to look at it of a way of how can I help this horse who maybe doesn't respond to additional pressure? Like, for example, I've clinicked with other trainers with Q, and Q, when he gets confused or anything like that, he doesn't shut down, but he's very like he's sulky. Like he gets very dead to your leg and things like that. So I can see how doing this kind of thing on the ground with him would help him to kind of see, look, like there's actually like a positive, like there's a reward at the end of this, but then also like, here's how we can approach this in a different way that is going to make this more enjoyable for you, as opposed to what some trainers have told me to do, you know, oh, ride with a bigger spur or, you know, go gallop him in the field for a while. It's like, okay, well, that's not going to help him. Like he's just, you know, needs
right,
more.
Just run him off. Yeah. Right. No, I think Ellie, like, I think all three of us come from a pretty traditional horse sport background, right? You know what I mean? Like, so this is like a relatively new concept. And I think you hit the nail on the head that there are some newer influencer type people out there that can have somewhat polarizing views, but I think they're steeped in like good intentions, but they can be like very like in your face to try to get you to think about things and like, this is abuse. And I do think it's good to think critically about these topics, right? But it's murky. And I appreciate you trying to distill a lot of this and like going into this clinic situation with an open mind, because I think that's a lot of people, that's hard for them to even do, to like take what we know and what you've been trained in doing all these years and go, you know, it's easy to go in there and be like kind of hardened to it and be like, this is stupid, you know, and you went in there and with an open mind. And I think that's really important. And I hope more people are open to, hey, there are new ideas that can be helpful in the way we approach working with horses in any fashion. It doesn't matter if you're like trying to create goals at horse shows, or like just have a better connection with your horse at home. I think there's always an opportunity to learn more from different perspectives. And I appreciate you sharing what you learned, Ellie. And if you guys are interested in learning more, Ellie is writing several pieces for Heels Down Mag. So there'll be a story up this week and then also a second one coming. So you'll hear more about her takeaways from what she learned there. But I feel like there's a lot more to this discussion. Like, this is just the tip of the iceberg. So,
yeah, and I think it's just a matter of having conversations and also not being afraid to open up about the way that we train horses, and also the way that it's okay to say, you know what, this really doesn't work with my horse. How right. can I do this differently? You know,
exactly.
I think
exactly.
that's the main thing, right? And I think I could definitely see this working with like previously abused horses and like problem horses specifically, those that really do just like shut down. I feel mm-hmm. like this would definitely, you know, give them a little like spark of like, you know, of trying new things, because I feel like us, sometimes when you're with a bad, you know, a bad teacher in school or a bad trainer, you know, like sometimes you're like, I'm just going to keep my head down and just like try to do this right and do like as little as possible, you know, to do this wrong, as opposed to I'm going to try to do this. And if it's wrong, my teacher's just going to say, oh, I see what you were saying, but let's try it this way. You know, right. I think it's all about the approach.
Yeah, I think that's great.
So our guest tonight is a good friend of mine. He's been on the podcast before. So everybody, welcome Will Coleman. We're excited to have him back on the podcast. He just had an amazing 4-star win at Kentucky. And now he is on his way to the CHIO Aachen with the horse Off the Record. How's he feeling, Coleman? And welcome.
Thanks, Jess. Timmy feels great. He's obviously coming off Kentucky at a very, very short break, but been back at work and getting ready for Aachen now for the last couple months, and he feels really good. I mean, I think we continue to be surprised that Timmy ages. He keeps kind of showing us that he's still really enjoying what he's doing, and he's got hopefully a lot left to do.
It was really exciting to watch you guys in Kentucky, especially since we had just talked to you while you were on your way to Kentucky. But I guess as you're prepping, Will, for your trip overseas, you know, you're no newcomer to Aachen. What's your favorite part of competing there?
You know, I think it's just the caliber of competition. I think the level of horsemanship on display, and just it's the best of the best, and really not just the three Olympic disciplines, but also in the combined driving and the vaulting. It's just an unbelievable horse show. And I find it really inspiring to be there for the week when I'm not riding and focusing on what I'm doing with my horse there. I wander around and I watch some of the best dressage riders and horses in the world warm up and compete. I do the same with the show jumping. And, you know, it's basically the highest level of competition that you could see any of those disciplines. And it's jaw-dropping to watch. And it really just, I find it super inspiring and motivating for the rest of the year.
Well, and you're on a team with some pretty heavy hitters, with Philip, with Boyd, with Caroline. Can you talk about what it's been like training and preparing with the team?
Well, by and large, everyone has sort of continued to do, I would say, their own program and getting ready for this event. We had a very brief training, kind of squad training weekend here recently up at Boyd's place in Pennsylvania. The horses kind of gathered there. They're all going to ship from there to Aachen. And we did a couple days of dressage riding and test riding with Christoph Hess, who's a phenomenal 5-star judge, as well as a kind of trainer, German guy. He's really lovely. And I thought he gave a fantastic couple of days to us there. And other than that, you know, I think we've all been sort of just continuing to kind of stick to sort of our normal programs and normal preparation methods for a big event. I thought all the horses looked really, really good. And so I think it's an exciting team to take over there. And you know, I think we're all really looking forward to representing the U.S. and hopefully
be back on that board. They have a really cool wall at Aachen, and Coleman has his name on it already. So we're going to have to wish him the best that he can do it again.
Well, you know, that was a really special year. Obviously, going back with Timmy was the horse I was lucky enough to win it on a few years ago. But I think more than anything, we wanted to go and serve the squad well. And I think the more important name or letters to get up on the board would be USA.
Absolutely.
That's kind of our mentality, is to contribute to that, to a team result.
Perfect. Well, we'll be cheering for all of you guys and really hoping for that. And then a little bit of what we want to talk about with you is, I know everybody's life is a bit different and how you do, but tell everybody, what is your life like? Like, what do you just start your day with? I know you're a very early morning person, but walk us through a day in the life of the farm at Will Coleman Equestrian in the middle of like a busy season like it is.
Well, I bet it's similar to busy professional. I kind of like having a bit of time in the woods myself. I look at horses, or I, you know, watch some training video back, or, you know, scout horses that I might be kind of trying to acquire, or, you know, I just do maybe myriad different kind of office-y things for maybe that first hour of the morning. And then I head to the barn, and you know, particularly in these summer months, like, we're usually starting to ride pretty early. And so I hop in my little UTV and with my two dogs, and we cruise down to the barn. I check in with Aaron, my head girl, and we kind of go over the horses. We're concerned or feel like we need to look at anything. We do that immediately. And then as soon as we sort of touch base and kind of gone over just general well-being of the horses and any sort of things that we feel like we need to monitor closely, I start riding. Basically, that's my day. I ride, you know, as soon as we get going, I start riding and probably keep riding until about 2 or 3 in the afternoon. And then we have a couple students that might do a bit of training during the day, or when I'm done riding at the end of the day, that's when we might do some teaching and things like that. But yeah, it's pretty full on, you know. It's a long day, but you know, they say if you enjoy what you do, you never work a day in your life. I think that's most days. That's probably how I feel. Some days it feels like a bit of work.
So, Will, you mentioned your UTV with your dogs. I'm just picturing it in my head now. I bet you that's a Yanmar UTV, isn't it?
It absolutely is. Yeah, we're really lucky to be supported by Yanmar America. They've been a sponsor of ours for a couple of years now. And really, I would say there's a piece of Yanmar equipment that positively affects every single thing we do every day in the barn and even in our personal life. So I hop in a Yanmar UTV called the Bull every morning, and it's, you know, probably a 2-minute drive down to the barn, but I put my two dogs in there and we cruise down to the stables, and then that same UTV might be used for a million different reasons during the day, whether it's, you know, moving some jumps around or taking some hay or show equipment onto the trailer or taking something out to horses in the fields, or even me just driving it out to teach some lessons out in the cross country field or just somewhere on the property, you know, going to look at horses gallop or, you know, anything that we might need to do or we need to kind of get somewhere quickly and not in a car. We've got a couple of different tractors that do all of our arena maintenance, all of our gallop maintenance, you know, mowing, even some excavating. We're putting in some new cross country features and new kind of gallop track, and Yanmar equipment is doing all of that work. So we're really lucky that we have the support of this great company, and literally any moment on any given day, you'll see a really beautiful piece of red, black machinery that'll be driving around the barn or the farm somewhere doing something for our horses.
That's awesome. We're obviously big fans of Yanmar on Heelstown Happy Hour too. So we appreciate that. And Will, it's been great to have you. Like, thanks so much for taking the time. I know life is crazy for you as you get ready to head overseas, and we wish you the best of luck.
Hey, I really appreciate it, guys. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for coming on, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, y'all. Cheers.
Belted Out Goods has a belt for every rider, from beautiful colors like Spring Collection, which just launched, to popular staples from stripes to sparkles to woven patterns. You can find a belt to match your unique style at beltitoutgoods.com. You can get 20% off your orders at Belted Out Goods with the coupon code HEELSDOWN20. So it's that time again. It's Rose and Thorn. Who is ready?
I don't know. Who's ready? Who wants to go first?
I'm ready. I can.
All right.
You
go,
got
Ellie.
It.
I hate global warming.
Everybody's thorn.
That is my thorn. But like, more seriously, it's made the ticks so bad.
Oh.
Yeah. Lyme disease is like all time high. It's bad.
My poor Bilbo, he breakfast, like, he's like a cat, right? He, like, if I sleep in, he's like, excuse me, you know, it's breakfast time, you know? And he didn't do that one morning. I was like, that's really weird. And then I tried to give him food, and he literally turned his nose up at it, which usually he's a scarfer, you know? And so I took his temperature, and it was like 104, which is like bare, like, really and truly, you don't want a dog above like 103, which is weird because it's so much higher than a horse, right? So I was like, oh my God. But so my vet didn't have any places, so I took him up to Cornell. When I got to Cornell, his temp was 105.8. He had freaking anaplasmosis from tick.
Oh, from the tick.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I mean, it's amazing you caught it so early.
Yeah.
I'm really lucky because like that stuff can be so deadly because the temperature gets so high that other things shut down. You know, like to have a temperature of almost 106, like that's insane. So they had to give him like IV fluids. So that is my thorn, is that the ticks are insane. Coming like out. I never even pulled one off of him. And he's on, you know, like a feed through preventative that he's been on for 7 years now, you know. So the fact that the ticks are so bad that this product like that he's been on for years has like failed is scary to me. And that's definitely my thorn, because I was not, like, I was really worried about him, and that was not a fun time. But my rose is that this is, like, his fifth day on Doxy, and he's finally, like, acting more like himself. Like, he's playing with his toys, and he's running around outside. Like, but, boy, it was, like, scary there for a while, and I'm like still monitoring his temperature, which thank God he's really good about. but so just to give you a perspective, his normal temperature is 99.6. So that's how high he was.
Wow.
Yeah. So I'm just waiting. I'm like, that's why I'm like, you know what? I'm going to buy all the frickin' Ultra Shield fly spray because I'm trying to make, because they don't make anything good for horses. Like, I've heard of horror stories with that Equispot stuff with, like, burning and things like that. And I'm like, what can I possibly put on, you know, why aren't they going to make a feed through for tick prevention for horses? That's what I want.
I know. It's just that, like, I buy the, this, I don't know if this is popular, but, like, the cattle permethrin spray from Tractor Supply that you dilute in water. Like, I use that before I go on a trail ride. For sure. Yeah. Like if I'm going to, or cross country schooling, anywhere where I'm going to be like more in woods, I always spray that. It is cheap. I will tell you that is not as expensive as the normal fly spray, but it doesn't like your horse will still swish, you know, but it does give you the permethrin coverage for ticks. But Florida is a different, like you live in tick central, Ellie. I don't. So yeah, it's a different environment for sure.
And the deer, man, I'm like, Matt, I know you don't have a hunting license, but maybe you could just go like shoot some trees to scare them off. So they go somewhere else. This would be, The only thing is that with the, Matt, actually the barn he grew up at, they used like the cattle tags and like just wove it into like the mane and tails of horses. And he said it worked great. The issue is I can't do it because I can't ever pronounce it, Justine. What is it? Permethrin?
I always call it permethrin, but I might be saying it wrong. Who knows?
Yeah, it's like deadly to cats. So,
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And with my immune system being compromised with the whole MS thing, my neurologist said, you want to be careful around this product. And I'm like, really? I would have never thought about that. But
yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So ticks are my thorn, and that poor Bilbo got anaplasmosis, but my rose is that he's finally starting to act more like himself, and I'm hopeful that this will, I mean, he'll test positive for it obviously for a while, but I'm just hopeful that he's actually out of the woods and he gets a recheck in a month. So fingers crossed there.
Yeah, poor guy. What about you, Jess?
So you guys are going to laugh about my rose, is I talked about that we're going into full pony season and everything else with the kids loving the pony and stuff. And that was my, you know, sort of thorn the other day. But I think the joke's on me is because, oh my goodness, the kids did lead line at Upperville in Loudoun. So at Upperville, they had like an age group. And so Hudson was too old. And so Abigail went, and I was actually shocked. They pinned lead line, like actually kicked everybody out. Top eight stayed. And Abigail is in a tutu, keep in mind, and on a horse.
I saw the pictures. It was so cute.
She was so cute. She has her sparkling whip on like one of our clients' horses who is perfect. He like did the meters that week and then moved up to meter tens back with the client the next week. And he was so cute. He slow walked around. I mean, it was amazing. So we're walking around and I'm like, Abigail's like, I wonder if I'm going to get a ribbon. I'm like, I don't know, but like, you know, you might not. And then you're just gonna have to try. And like, you know, we're going to try again. And so to my surprise, they're like top eight and her number got called. And I was like, oh, you are actually getting a ribbon. And the joke of it is like Abigail wants Quincy to win her a pink ribbon every time. And I'm like, I'm that's kind how my of sister tired was. Of pink. I like, kind of want a different color. And so when they announced fifth place to Abigail, I was like, see, she got her pink ribbon. Thank goodness. So it was so cute. And then the next week, Loudoun had like a little more less formal one. And both kids did the lead line. And we used the 120 horse because she wasn't available because the class was going during the lead line. So it was so cute. They painted their ponies like, or their horses, the client horses. They both did lead line. They high-fived each other. They had such a fun time that was definitely my rose, was that they were so cute on the horses. And all of, like a lot of our clients and like girls came out and walked with them. And it was like a whole fun thing for Loudoun. And it was such a fun horse show. Like, it was 2 weeks of a lot of fun. So that was definitely my rose, because that was a lot of fun. And my thorn is, well, this heat. Like, I mean, one, I'm now riding, like, before I even drop the kids off for camp. So, like, that's annoying, but, like, a sacrifice, fine. But the real part of the thorn is that, like, we go to Michigan, which I'm super excited to go to Traverse, but, you know, when we would normally probably leave, we don't want to get stuck shipping the horses. You know, yeah. Like, we were just talking with Coleman, and he's, like, stuck on the side of the road, like, you know, in traffic, and it's the heat. So now, yeah, my thorn is, like, just making sure we kind of don't get stuck and trying to plan the best way possible, if it's possible, to not kind of get stuck in that heat. Because, you know, everywhere from us to Ellie to Michigan's hot.
I know. It's hot just everywhere right now. Ugh.
I know. So I'm hoping, my fingers crossed, that we get, like, a little bit of a break before we leave, and, like, maybe it's not as bad and that we can kind of time it differently. But yeah, that's definitely.
Can you guys ship overnight? I know that's,
yeah,
not ideal.
And that's what I think Doug will end up doing, is he'll drive through the night instead of, like, risking it during the day. And so, yeah, that's probably what we'll do. But, you know, we thought, oh, we're going to Michigan, and it's been kind of easy that we never even thought about it to the last couple of days that have been,
sure,
you know, I mean, we've been over 100 this week. So that's abnormal for us, that, like, that's, you know, we've had, like, snow this year and then now 100 plus days. So with the heat index of, like, Hudson's like 110, mom, that's, like, deadly. I'm like, oh, it's just not that extreme, but yes, it's bad.
It's not good.
It's not good. So what about you, Justine?
Ugh. Well, speaking of being sweaty, so I've, in the summertime, Alex, my husband, and I, this is normally where we try to travel, just because it's so dang hot at home.
Yeah.
It's like, we want to get out of here. So we've only gone to other hot places. We went to the Bahamas. Because, you know, that makes sense. But the Bahamas are wonderful. Like, we've grown up going there. It feels very familiar, and the beaches are beautiful. It's hard to be mad when you're in the Bahamas. So we had a great stay there. And then Alex has a lot of travel for work. So he routinely speaks at a conference that happens in Jekyll Island in Georgia, which is, like, a coastal island, like, right at the Florida-Georgia line. But it's beautiful. If you guys have never been to Jekyll Island, it's like a Southern charm haven with a beach. They have a beautiful hotel there, the Jekyll Island Club Resort. That's a historic hotel that is just ultra charming. The food is amazing. It's very bougie. That's where the conference is always. So it's becoming a nice little, like, summer reprieve getaway that we do for a long weekend. But they have a neighboring island, Jekyll Island, called Cumberland Island, which is run by the National Park Service. And it actually has two mansions on it, because the island used to be owned by the Carnegie family. One mansion burned down. So it burned down in, like, the 1950s, but it is, so it's, like, ruins now. And then the other one is completely intact and it is a museum. So you can kind of tour the museum of the Carnegie family and when they spent time there. But the island is inhibited, like, all, there's hundreds of wild horses that live on this island. And they all used to be domesticated, like, back in the 1800s, 1900s, when the Carnegie family would be there, and then they've just been feral since then. So now there are all these, like, wild bands of little tiny wild horses that live there, and it's beautiful. So you take a ferry from another, like, coastal town, and you spend the day there, but it's very remote. Like, there are no facilities on the island, so there's, like, you can camp there if you want. And obviously they have beaches, and then they have the ruins of one mansion and then the one museum. And there is one private small boutique hotel on the island, but otherwise it's just, like, you pack in and you're expected to pack out whatever you bring, because it's all just a natural island.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It was really awesome. It was, like, a magical day to spend the day there. We took the ferry over. We were there all day. We brought our bikes, and it's not easy to bike because you're, like, biking through sand, but we biked, like, probably 15 miles and just were inundated with wild horses. It was, you know, obviously they're used to people, but they had a bunch of newborn foals on the ground. And it was just really cool. We had like an amazing time. I would probably recommend not going in June during the heat dome.
Probably not ideal.
My body is still recovering. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
I've never drank more water in my life, but we packed, like we made sandwiches. We made like pimento cheese BLTs and like had a beautiful lunch while we were there, like picnic lunch, and biked and took pictures of the horses and enjoyed the beach and the wildlife. And it's really magical. I saw some wild horses out west, but I've never done the Chincoteague or anything like that. So this was very special. And then, but at the end of the day, when we got back on the ferry to go home, I was very excited to go back to my charming bougie historic hotel and get a couple's massage. I'm not going to lie. I'm old. I don't like
don't even
nearing
judge,
40.
Yeah.
I like camping out there sounds like a nightmare, but it was
absolutely not.
But it was beautiful. So that is my rose. Ooh, my thorn. Gosh, it's hard to say. You know, Mikey is hanging in there. It's hot, but we're still sweating, knock on wood. So I don't know if I have a thorn. Things are good. Just kind of hanging in there, trying to survive the summer. So that's all I got.
That's how you know she's used to the heat when she says it's not, you know, terrible.
Yeah. She's used to the heat. Exactly.
I know. I'm like, as long as Mikey's surviving, I can't
then
complain.
She's okay.
You know?
Exactly. Mikey's the judgment. If Mikey's miserable having his summer sores and all this, it's not good.
He's sweating, man. Fingers crossed, all toes crossed, everything, you know, I'm saying my prayers, novenas, whatever. Like, he's sweating. So it's all good. But
you're welcome to take some of my sweat, because let me tell you, it is not
tell
a
me
fun
about
time.
It.
I've
tell
showered like
it.
Three times today.
I know.
It's rough,
so
man.
Disgusting.
It's rough. I know. All right, but it's time for our mailbag. And we got one from a friend of the podcast, Jessa, who's one of the founders of Ride IQ, which we love and I still use almost daily. She posted in our Facebook group recently that she is looking to talk to horse owners who think and talk a lot about their horse's health and soundness. And if you're interested in talking to her directly, she does have these, you know, we're going to answer these questions ourselves. But if you want to answer these questions to Jessa, it will help Ride IQ. And she's willing to pay someone $50 in a Dover gift card to anyone who participates. So if you're a fan of Ride IQ, I know it's great. So if you're a fan of Ride IQ and you're happy to answer pretty common questions about your horse, I feel like any horse girl I know could answer any of these questions. Reach out to Jessa at Ride IQ and she's would be happy to listen to you and take down your information. But all right, first question I want you both to answer first. So wants to know, should I be using boots on my horse when riding or not?
No.
So I'm yes. If they have shoes, yes. And not necessarily they have to have back boots, but they have to have front boots if they have shoes.
Okay.
Like for flatting too?
Oh, all the time. Mm-hmm.
Really?
Oh, okay. I'm with Ellie.
They wear front boots all the time if they have shoes.
Okay.
And
I'm with Ellie.
Some cars wear front boots even if they don't have shoes. But if they have shoes, like, they definitely wear front boots. And most of them wear, like, hind ankles. And just open fronts. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. Okay. So 2 no, 1 yes.
Yeah.
Next question. What supplements can I give my horse to keep them sound and healthy? Who wants to go first?
Oh, mine's really easy. I'm not even a big supplement person. Mine's super easy because I don't even give that many supplements. I feed Sinutra, the Sinistride, like the head to hoof. And in the summertime or when they do it, we do Replenimash with Purina. And the big guys get Super Sport. That's it. Those three. That's done.
All right. Ellie, what about you? What's your regime?
None.
None at all? Just straight feed and hay?
So
you just said you like Super Sport. I do like
Super Sport when my horses are in work, which.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
Not.
So, like, that's
sure,
only
sure.
a top one.
But honestly, the only supplements my horses are on are the gut ones that will cover them for Colicare insurance.
Yep.
And they're on like a feed through for flies right now.
Some of ours do get the Gastrumend from
Sinutra.
Yep.
Yeah.
So if they're stomachy and they're like prone to like, I used to feed ulcer guard and stuff traveling, and a lot of ours are on the road, right? So yeah. I give them the Gastromend, and I don't even use ulcer guard anymore.
Wow, that's pretty good.
That's what I thought.
I'm just a big they have Equiox when they need it. I'm an Adequan person, but I'm not a supplement person. Like the only supplement,
it's a waste of money.
Like the 12 different supplements. No.
Yeah. Same. So
the only supplement that I do that has helped my barefoot horses is that Farrier's Formula Double Strength. Like that is like, it's basically just like alfalfa and other stuff.
Yeah. But if they're fat, if they look like they need it, they'll get alfalfa pellets like as a supplement, but I mean, I don't even feed
But that's
that.
Not a sup, but it's like not no, a supplement. No, that's just providing good forage. Yeah.
But that's what I meant. Like as a supplement to their hay, we give alfalfa pellets soaked, but I wouldn't say it's a supplement. I mean, I use that instead of the Farrier's formula. That's what I mean.
No, that makes sense. Yeah. I mean, the thing my vet said, because I was like, at the time I was doing all these different smart packs, you know, I was and he was like, Ellie, the only thing your horse really needs is water, hay, and salt. That's it.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it.
So simple.
I'm like, okay. What about you, Justine?
Any supplements? Yeah, he's on the Rylene GI gut supplement. I think it's good, so I've always fed it. A little bit of electrolytes this time of year that he doesn't want to eat anyway. And he's got on sweat stuff only this time of year. I feed him the Combat Cool from a company called Combat Boots. I really like it. Okay. I've always fed it. It's like 1AC didn't work for him, so that's what he eats. And
whatever he'll work.
And then he's an Adequan guy, occasionally Equiox guy, and that's about it. You know. And then Cinchil, mostly the Cinchil Pure when it's like time to go to a horse show. You know.
Yeah. I mean, we'll do that in the show season.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. All right.
Their gut stuff, I think, is
their gut.
I will definitely supplement with gut stuff. Yeah. UlcerGuard, GastroGuard.
The Sinutra, though, I'm telling you, try that.
I like the Gastromend. I fed the Jill.
So much cheaper.
I fed the G Chill when he was like coming into work. And I was really happy with it.
Yeah, I feed that to all of them in horse shows, and I don't even have to give them like the paste a lot of times.
I know. Okay. It's great. Yeah, I really like it too.
Okay. Yeah, I'll look into that one for sure.
Last question. What are things I can do to prevent my horse from getting injured? LOL.
If you find the answer to that, you would be a millionaire.
Right?
I'm going to take another sip of wine.
Yeah, right? For me, God, I mean, to prevent them, I'm like, probably wrap them in bubble wrap and pray. I mean, nothing. But for us, like, just listening to them, if they are a little bit, like, just not feeling great, I don't push them that day. If it was supposed to be a jump day and they don't feel it, go for a walk instead. Listen to them like you would listen to your own body. If you're feeling a little sore and you feel you could go push yourself and do extra mileage and extra, like, you know, strength training and weights, no, you're not going to do that. You're going to take an easy day and do it in a couple days. So, that's kind of our principle on it is, you know, if they're not feeling 100%, give them a couple days. They'll probably be fine in a couple days.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think that's the best advice.
If you push them, that's where I find
where they break. Yeah.
100%.
I like that advice. What about you, Ellie?
Yeah. I mean, I think that, and also like, even if it's a horse that's like not in shape, doing things slowly. I mean, I know we've talked about this before, Jess, but like, don't be afraid to walk for a long time before you even ever trot your horse when you're getting them back into shape. Take it slow. It is not a race.
Definitely. I think that's all good advice. I don't have good advice. Mine always is injured, so I'm not the person to give advice.
Yeah, I'm not really in it.
What can
Everyone
I do to prevent
has injured
it?
Horses. That's the biggest problem. Everybody gets injured horses. It's like, you know, a little bit of luck and a little bit of strategy and a lot of praying.
I was laughing, Jess, with Justine earlier because literally all of my horses have currently either bitten each other or rubbed themselves on something, all where the saddle goes. And I'm trying to tell myself that they didn't do it on purpose.
And you're like, yeah, right. I'm like, kill him.
Yeah, you guys were purposely itching each other. And you were like, hey, just give me something a little deeper here. So that way she doesn't try to ride me this week.
I get a whole week off if I do this.
Yeah, exactly. No saddle pad for me.
So if you guys have a question for us and you want us to answer it on the air, you can always send us an email. Our email address is justine@heelsdownmedia.com. Or you can post in our Facebook group, the Heels Down Happy Hour Podcast Lounge. And if you want to hear more from us, check us out on heelsdownmag.com for the latest news. And make sure you're following us at Heels Down Happy Hour on Instagram, at Heels Down Mag on Facebook and TikTok. And if you love our show, please leave us a rate and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We want to say thank you to our sponsors this month, Yanmar, Belted Out Goods, and Horse Spot. That's a wrap, guys.
Cheers.
Cheers.